That's what these homosexuals are trying to do. These people are terrorists, they're radicals, and they're extremists.
That was our mission. Let's go to the city, hang out, go to the pier. You know, it's nothing but gay people. We're going to go out there and flirt and have fun and laugh and just chill. He spit in my face and threw a cigarette, and he swung at me.
And by the time I turned around, he had Renato on the ground choking her.
They were a pack of lesbians who jumped this guy and almost killed him.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Liberian churchmen blame gay people for Ebola. U.S. televangelist Pat Robertson issues a gay terrorism alert. And black New Jersey lesbians go to prison just for going out in the night. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending October 25th, 2014. Right-wing religious crackpots around the world routinely blame LGBT people for everything from floods to tornadoes to drought. Few take them seriously. But leaders of Liberia's Roman Catholic and Anglican churches are claiming that the Ebola outbreak there, one of the worst on the African continent, is God's punishment for the country's acceptance of homosexuality, and they are being taken seriously there. The Liberian Council of Churches said in a statement earlier this year that God was angry with the people of Liberia because it was a nation of immoral acts. Louis Zeigler, the Archbishop of the Roman Catholic Church of Liberia, specifically targeted gay people. "Where are we going as Liberians if we are advocating for homosexuality?" he asked. "Are we not calling for curses upon ourselves?" A widely cited Reuters report this week said that LGBT people across the West African country are doubly threatened by the Ebola outbreak. They fear not only contracting the virus, but escalating anti-LGBT assaults, including calls for their execution. Monrovia-based activist Leroy Ponpon told the news agency that homophobic violence has become so pervasive that many in the LGBT community are reluctant to leave their homes, and some who do wear disguises. "Right now," he said, "all we want is protection." With a population of about 4 million people, Liberia has been among the most affected countries in the recent outbreak of the virus, with more than 4,500 cases of the disease and 2,700 deaths.
A Nigerian federal high court judge this week dismissed a challenge to the country's draconian anti-gay laws because the man who filed the suit is heterosexual and therefore not directly affected by them. Joseph Taria Eba sued the government for enacting what's come to be known as the Jail All the Gays Law last year, which his suit called a violation of the fundamental human rights of LGBT Nigerians guaranteed in the nation's constitution. The 42-year-old Nigerian native is married with children and has lived in the UK for the last 14 years. But he told BuzzFeed that, "I decided I wasn't going to accept a Nigeria that was discriminatory." Private consensual adult gay sex was already illegal in the country, but the new law increased penalties for those acts, criminalized advocacy for LGBT rights, banned same-gender couples from civil marriage, punishes same-gender couples who try with 14 years in prison, and wedding guests with 10 years. Activists worry that any self-identified LGBT person who files a challenge to the law could be immediately arrested. Abba's brother and lawyer, Mike and Ahoro Abba, said they would appeal the ruling.
About 20 hooded vandals invaded the second anniversary party of an LGBT center in the Macedonian capital of Skopje this week, throwing bottles and crates and leaving one young woman injured. Balkan Insight said the attack took place at the Damar Cafe in the city's Old Bazaar area, and that the 10-minute assault became a stampede. Witnesses says they didn't see the faces of the assailants because they wore hoods, but one described them as well-organized. "They had an exact plan of how to enter," she said, "what to demolish, and when to leave before the police came." Vandals attacked the center twice in 2013, once when people were inside watching a movie, and later in the year when no one was in the building. The police failed to make arrests in either case. The center is financially supported by the Dutch embassy. Outgoing Dutch ambassador, Mariette Sherman, said the failure of authorities to curb anti-LGBT violence creates a perception that this is sponsored or tolerated in the best case, by the government and used as an instrument to make people afraid and to try to shut them up. Aranya Porovska, director of the Helsinki Committee for Human Rights in Macedonia, a host of the event, said that in Macedonia, the fundamental rights of the LGBT community have no value. Their right to live is endangered.
But a civilian transgender U.S. military employee has won a landmark discrimination case. Army veteran Tamara Lusardi, who's disabled, endured ongoing discrimination while working at the Army's Aviation and Missile Research Development and Engineering Center in Alabama. Her suit claimed that her superiors banned her from using female bathrooms and continued to refer to her as he and sir. She finally filed a complaint with the Office of Special Counsel, an independent federal investigative and prosecutorial agency, which ruled this week that the abuse she suffered was sufficiently frequent, pervasive, and humiliating to constitute discriminatory harassment. As a disabled veteran, Lusardi said in a statement, I take great pride in my role protecting our soldiers from harm. Like anyone else, I just want the freedom to be myself at work. The case is the latest example of the Obama administration's increasing defense of the rights of transgender people under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which outlaws bias based on gender.
Transgender people are, however, currently banned from active military service in the United States. Trans military personnel from 18 other countries gathered last week in Washington, D.C. to discuss how the U.S. military might join them. The conference, entitled Perspectives on Transgender Military Service from Around the Globe, was billed as a first-ever international gathering of trans military service members. Featured speakers included transgender officers from Canada, Australia, New Zealand, a former U.S. Navy SEAL who transitioned after her service, an intelligence officer with the Swedish Air Force, and a squadron leader for the British Royal Air Force. U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel signaled a willingness to consider transgender service earlier this year, but later backtracked and said he was not inclined to formally review the current policy.
Breaking with most of his peers, a federal judge has upheld the ban on civil marriage for same-gender couples in the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico. District Judge Perez Jimenez wrote that the very survival of the political order depends upon the procreative potential embodied in traditional marriage. The question now, he concluded, is whether judicial wisdom may contrive methods by which those solid principles can be circumvented or even discarded. An appeal of the ruling to the first U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals is in the works. Marriage equality already flourishes in all the U.S. states over which that court has jurisdiction.
Lesbian and gay couples still can't get married in Kansas, Montana, and South Carolina, even though the U.S. Supreme Court recently let stand federal court rulings with jurisdiction over those states that overturned their civil marriage bans. Officials in each state are demanding that a federal court specifically order them to issue marriage licenses to same-gender couples.
And even though gay and lesbian couples have already started tying the knot in Alaska following a district court ruling striking down the ban there, the state's Republican governor and attorney general are asking for what's called an en banc review by 11 judges of the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. A three-judge panel of the court has already upheld district court rulings that struck down bans in other states.
Idaho's Republican governor, Butch Otter, who last week said he wouldn't challenge the overturning of the ban in his state, reversed course this week and is now asking for an en banc review by the Ninth Circuit of its three-judge panel's ruling that struck down the bans in his state and in Nevada. But Nevada's Republican governor, Brian Sandoval, says he's opposed to such a challenge. Absent his administration's defense of the ban, the right-wing Coalition for the Protection of Marriage is asking the entire Ninth Circuit to review the ruling. A major issue in that case will be the conservative organization's legal standing to intervene. Same-gender couples have already started marrying in both Idaho and Nevada.
Meanwhile, Utah's Supreme Court lifted a ban on adoptions by same-gender couples this week following a request by Republican Attorney General Sean Reyes. His office requested a stay earlier this year after a district judge asked officials to explain why such couples were not being allowed to adopt children. The state now opening adoptions to married same-gender couples appears to be a byproduct of the Supreme Court's recent refusal to hear a case overturning Utah's civil marriage ban.
Elsewhere, organizers of the 6th annual Hong Kong Pride celebration have chosen an umbrella as this year's symbol, in coincidental solidarity with the city's pro-democracy movement. 500 rainbow umbrellas were ordered in early August, more than a month before the street protests, known as Occupy Central, began. The Cantonese word for putting up an umbrella sounds like support, and protesters have been using them to defend against tear gas, pepper spray, and police batons. Pride spokeswoman Wei Siu Lik said that, "We support civil society, and we hope it can support us in return, too." More than 8,000 people marched with Pride in 2013. The South China Morning Post reports that participants are scheduled to begin this year's march at Hong Kong's Victoria Park on the afternoon of November 8th.
And finally, out actor and activist Sir Ian McKellen reprised his role as the wizardly Gandalf from the Lord of the Rings trilogy during a visit to Chew Valley School this week as part of the work to combat campus bullying and homophobia. Speaking to a crowd of students, he also urged them to study well.
In your preparation for your examinations, if you don't do your revision properly, do you know what will happen? You shall not pass!
That's NewsWrap for the week ending October 25th, 2014. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap was produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
NewsWrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
Out in the Night exemplifies injustice. Later in the program. You might remember this golden oldie.
In San Francisco, some of the gay community, they want to get people, so if they've got the stuff, they'll have a ring, you shake hands, and the ring's got a little thing where you cut your finger. I mean, it's that kind of vicious stuff, which would be the equivalent of murder.
Or maybe this is your recent favorite from U.S. televangelist Pat Robertson's homophobic hit parade.
What the gays are saying is, we're going to drive you out of town. Either you conform to us or you must leave. That's the message that's being put out. It's the same message that there was in Sodom and Gomorrah. You're either going to have open sex with anybody or else you leave.
Every time he opens his foot-filled mouth on the issue, one would think that Robertson has hit bottom, but he keeps bottoming himself. He'd already cautioned a missionary on his show this week to beware of getting AIDS from towels in Africa. Then Right-Wing Watch caught one of their most prolific offenders in another unfounded diatribe, this time about a group of pastors in Houston, Texas, who've been called to testify about their petition-gathering practices during a failed effort to repeal the city's anti-discrimination law. He even dragged Houston's out mayor, Anise Parker, into the mix.
There's one thing to want to persuade somebody to believe like you do. That's what Christianity is about, to bring the gospel message, say this is good news, and we'd like you to accept it. That's one thing. There's something else to take the arm of the government to force somebody to do something that is against, is contrary to their religion. And that's what these homosexuals are trying to do. They're trying to force people who are Christians to marry them or else face jail, to make cakes honoring them or else go to jail, and give their servants over and divulge their innermost thoughts or go to jail. Now, that's the kind of thing we're dealing with. These people are terrorists, they're radicals, and they're extremists. No Christian in his right mind would ever try to enforce somebody against their belief or else suffer jail. Now, they did that during the Inquisition. It was horrible. It was a black mark on our history. But it isn't being done now. There's no Christian group I know of anywhere in the world that would force somebody to do something contrary to their deep-held religious beliefs or else face criminal penalties. But that's what the homosexuals are trying to do here in America, and I think it's time pastors stand up and fight this monstrous thing. I mean, if the gays want to go out and do their gay sex, That's one thing. But if they want to force you to accept it and solemnify it by marriage, then that's a different matter. And it's an infringement on people's religious beliefs. And what's being done in Houston is a gay, the woman they elected is a homosexual. She's a lesbian. And that's her, she's trying to force pastors to conform to her beliefs. It's wrong.
That was right-wing, fact-free televangelist Pat Robertson. What will he think of next?
I'm diddly-day, an actor's life is gay. It's great to be a celebrity, an actor's life for me.
Every actor worth his salt strives to be honest and true in his portrayals on the stage or screen. Hello, this is Ian McKellen, and that's exactly what This Way Out does as well, right here on this station.
Their real-life American Horror Story was sensationalized by the media and criminalized by overzealous law enforcement. Now it's been documented in a new film by Blair Dorsch Walther. That prompted entertainment correspondent Steve Pride to get the story directly from two of the women whose lives were forever changed after they simply went out in the night.
What's the difference between a gathering of white heterosexual women and black lesbians? To the New York City police, it's pretty obvious that one is a group of friends. Perhaps they're even named Carrie, Samantha, Charlotte, and Miranda. And the others, the butch black ones, well, they're a gang. An aggressive and dangerous man-hating gang. Or as the press would later label them, a wolf pack and a seething sapphic septet. That's why a Greenwich Village altercation in 2006 between a violent man and a group of seven young friends became a sensationalized national story, and why the women, who had never been a member of any gang, faced enhanced gang-related charges during their year-long trial.
Police operator 1512.
Yeah, we had an ambulance over here on 6th Avenue and 3rd Street. The man stabbed on the ground bleeding.
Got
4.
Anonymous, unverified. Officers fighting with gang. There's Bloods and Crips on street level.
Police operator 1398. We're at the emergency.
There's a gentleman that was stabbed by what seven girls.
Call, are you the patient?
No, man's on the floor. He's been stabbed.
Okay, is the patient breathing?
Yes.
Awake. Is he awake? Hello.
Hi, I'm Renata Hill.
Hi, I'm Patrice Johnson.
In our neighborhood, at that time, it wasn't really LGBT friendly, and we hanging out and we sitting on the stoop. We wasn't ready to go in a house, so we like, you know what? Let's go to the city. None of us really had any money. We counting up change. As long as we had enough to get to the village, we like, let's just go out there, see the lights. You don't really need money to go to the city. You just need money to get there, and that's it, and get back home. You know, you go out, you look at all the stores. And just our company with each other, we would have a ball. We don't need no extra people, no music. That's just how we are. We laugh all night long. That was our mission. Let's go to the city, hang out, go to the pier. You know, it's nothing but gay people. We're going to go out there and flirt and have fun and laugh and just chill. And we wasn't even in the city for a good 10 minutes, I don't think. We got like a couple of blocks from when we got off the train and was approached by this guy in just a real disrespectful way. We really didn't take it too serious at first. Like, okay, you know, nah, we're all gay. These are all my girlfriends. You know, he's like, oh, you a bum, this, that, and the third. You think you're a man. It just kind of escalated. And we're still laughing it off, like, whatever. You know, he's just mad because he can't pick up no girls.
When he said, let me get some of that, I didn't automatically think he was being disrespectful. I really just thought he was asking for one of my co-defendant's soda. So I'm like, you know, give him your soda, get another one. She's like, I'm not giving him my soda. And I'm like, just give it to him. He's like, well, I don't want that. And he pointed down at my crotch like, I want that. So I'm like, oh, no, you know, I'm a lesbian. I'm good, sir. And he was like, you a lesbian? So Renata was like, yes, these are all my girlfriends. And we all laughing, thinking he's joking. Like, nobody's thinking that he's serious. He gotta be joking. So we tried to walk away like 3 times. The first time, we almost got hit by a garbage truck. Everybody jumped back up on the sidewalk. He's still talking to us. We tried to cross again and almost got hit by a whole bunch of cars. And like the third time, I just see a cigarette go over my shoulder and hit Renata. And then we turn around and he spits.
He decided he wanted to take it a step further because we wasn't really responding the way he wanted us to. I guess initially we were supposed to start like being aggressive and we wasn't. So he spit in my face and threw a cigarette and he swung at me.
I'm just standing there. And by the time I turned around, he had Renata on the ground choking her. And one of my co-defendants, she tried to pull Renata from up under him, and he reached up and he punched down her face. And the whole time, me and Terrain is just standing there like, oh my God, like, this is really happening. Like, why is this happening? And everybody is trying to get him off of Renata, yet he's pulling Shanice here at the same time, still choking Renata. And I'm like, this guy is crazy. And then I turn around and he's choking Venice. And once he starts choking Venice, she stops fighting him. Her face is starting to change colors and she's trying to get him off her neck. So I went to go grab my knife and I tried to cut his wrist to get him off her neck. And Renata is also trying to grab him to get her off him. He jumped on top of Renata and he continued to choke Renata. At that time, I backed up. And my other co-defendants came in and he's constantly trying to get him off of her, yet he's punching everybody or pulling their hair. And the fight just escalated. He pulled out one of my co-defendants' dress. He also pulled out Venice's hairpiece and swung it in the air and threw it at her. That night was just crazy.
He was out for blood, basically. And I don't understand where we was females. You didn't really have to come at us like that. You didn't have to continue to come at us like that. We was just trying to defend each other. We wanted all of us to be away from him safely so that we can just keep going. Even at that time, our mind is still like, we would just want to go to the pier. We wasn't trying to, like, all right, this happened. We want to go home. No, we want to go to the pier. Let's go see some girls. Let's go hang out. We walked away from the incident. We went to McDonald's, which is literally across the street. We ordered something to eat. We're not trying to run. We go to use the bathroom. We come out and it's cops everywhere going up, coming down. And we like, why is this happening? It wasn't that serious. We had a fight. We didn't think that he was really hurt because he was fighting somebody else when we walked away from the situation. Then we was like, you know what? Let's just go home. Let's get back to the train station. Let's go home. And they end up jumping out on us a block away from the train station. Our life was over at that point. Everything changed.
They were a pack of lesbians who jumped this guy and almost killed him.
He was attacked by a group of women yesterday in Manhattan. Police say the man made a comment, allegedly, to one of the women.
He was attacked because he was a straight man. Just a real nasty gang assault.
We didn't know how serious it was. Once they get us to the precinct, they held us there for over 24 hours, questioning us over and over again. Like, they just kept telling us if we did a statement, you guys could just get out of here. We just need you to write down what happened, write a statement. And at first, we're like, nobody says nothing. Don't say anything. But after hours and hours and hours of them coming in there, questioning us or leaving us in there alone for hours with no water, no food, and not knowing what's going on, it's like, okay, I'll write down what happened. Because at the end of the day, we wasn't really scared to write down what happened because we all was telling the truth about what happened, and nobody knew that this guy was injured. That was the main thing. Nobody knew that he was injured. I had no idea. So when they said to me, which one of you stabbed him? I laughed. Stabbed him. I'm like, yeah, right. I'm thinking about Law and Order, how they try to trick you to say something. And I'm like, yeah, right. Ain't nobody stabbed him. So now I'm thinking we playing around back and forth. And he's like, no. Somebody already admitted to stabbing him. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Clearly, I had no idea what he was talking about. So they was like, write down a statement. Just write down the truth and you could go home. And I did. My statement was, we came to New York. We ran into this guy. He approached us. We had an argument. We got into a fight. We got arrested. That's my statement. That's what happened. Then he got upset with that because he wanted to know exactly who played what role. But being honest with him, everything was happening so fast. I really don't know what was going on.
Next thing I know, we got all these indictments.
Assault in the first, assault in the second, assault in the third, gang assault in the first, gang assault in the second, attempted murder. I'm leaving out three, but I think it was a total of like 7 or 8 charges.
And I would assume the DA got on board and she the one that went forward with giving us all these charges.
We went to trial even though we was offered 6 months, 5 years probation. We figured that everything was in our favor, even the surveillance. We were backing away from him and he's coming towards us. He's taunting us. That's how it went down. So we felt like we had a fair fight because everything was out there. We went to trial, we fought it, and once we were found guilty, we was like, okay, we're going to get a little bit of time, not that much. When we got sentenced, it was just unbelievable. I was in shock. My sentence was 8 years.
Mine was 11. I was released from prison August 13th, 2013. It's really scary to know that you can't defend yourself. It's against the law to defend yourself. And that's basically what they were saying to us. We shouldn't have fought back. They actually tried to say we was heterophobic. We hate men. And that bothered me. How can you say we hate men? You didn't even ask us just because one guy. They made it seem like they had a history of us hating men. To say that statement, and that bothered me because I grew up with men. Like, that's all I have is brothers and male cousins. I only have one sister, and that was the only really female that was around, you know, other than the friends that I grew up with that was females. As far as my family is concerned, like, my dad is my best friend. How can you sit here and say I hate men? How can you sit here and say any of that?
We relive in that day over and over again with every step forward we try to make. We have to explain what happened. Even if we're given that opportunity to explain, when you go look for a job and you have to check, yes, I have a felony, and the person that's reviewing the application, if there's somebody that don't know you and you have to write it out, because it's not so bad as checking, yes, I have a felony, but then writing down what the felony is and you have to write out gang assault, it's like, you're not going to go in Macy's and put, yeah, gang assault, and they're going to say, yeah, welcome. You're going to be the greeter at the front door. You know, it's automatically, no Brano, no chances.
Three of the original seven women accepted the plea deal, and of the four sentenced by the all-white jury, two later had their convictions overturned. This has been a conversation with Patrice Johnson and Renata Hill, who are not so lucky. A documentary about their ordeal called Out in the Night is making the rounds of film festivals across the USA. Find more information online at outinthenight.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Girls, they want to have fun. Oh, those girls just want to have fun. Oh.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. This week, Wenzel Jones, Michael LeBeau, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Chase Holfelder covered Girls Just Want to Have Fun. And Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners for making this program possible. Special thanks this week to the folks at WEFT in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois for their longtime support. Check out thiswayout.org for news wrap transcripts, program information, and social media links. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon with a special shout-out to our newest listeners on Rainbow World Radio based in Birmingham, Alabama. And thanks to online listeners at thiswayout.org and on WOOL Bellows Falls, Vermont, 3OCR Colac, Victoria, KYRS Medical Lake, Spokane, Washington, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned!